this week, gold added to gains while the NASDAQ finished at another weekly bull market record. Welcome back, everyone. Chris Walczak, it's great to be with you. We've got a Muy Grande-sized episode with industry guests, including Ralph Acampora of Altera Wealth Management. Everyone listening to the show today likely has seen Mr. Acampora on CNBC as well as many outlets over the decades. His look on precious metals is positive. He thinks we could see an advance above $1,400 an ounce this year. He outlines his favorite technical indicators, which he calls fusion investing, and likes stocks because he says, frankly, no one else is excited about them, preferring the contrarian standpoint. And then Harry S. Dent Jr., best-selling author and economist, he says the gold market is following the commodity cycle, which is wildly bullish. The CRB Commodities Index blasted higher this week, of course boosted by West Texas Intermediate crude, which also flew higher. He says every investor should allocate at least 5 to 10% of gold and silver into his portfolio, and he's not a professed gold bug like the rest of us. Investors are turning to the yellow metal due to unexpected security issues in encrypted currencies such as Bitcoin. One of the indexes was hacked, leading to millions of dollars in losses, people losing confidence. Good luck hacking gold. And he thinks the positive trend in U.S. equities is directly correlated to our negative rates. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Well, mostly sunny skies appeared over the precious metals sector this week on dollar weakness, spurred by dovish comments from the FOMC meeting minutes. By Friday's close, the yellow metal was up about $3 for the week, finishing at $13.43. Silver dropped about 20 cents, finishing at $19.32, still respectable and within earshot of $20. The precious metals XAU shares dropped $4, 3.6%, finishing at $107.70, still over 150% higher from this year's lows. West Texas Intermediate crude stole the show, up over $4.50 a barrel, closing above $49.11 per barrel. That's up 10% after a few weeks of intense selling. Black gold did blast higher, just as predicted a few weeks ago when we were at 40. I called the bottom there, and wow, did I not expect it to run that far that quickly. I think it could be setting the stage for a run to 70 or higher. Meanwhile, gold held ground on news that the U.S. dollar dropped to the lowest level in over 2 months following the Fed meeting minutes in July, released on Wednesday, that showed growing consensus of low inflation risk. However, New York Fed President William Dudley indicated a move could come soon, but dissenters among his colleagues suggested waiting until inflation is around 2%, which we are not near right now. The Fed funds futures indicate near even odds of a rate hike up until early 2017, where odds now have changed to slightly better than even odds of a rate hike. I think the news represents a solid sea change in attitude by investors, which in previous months indicated virtually no odds of a rate hike. It implies investors view the Fed policymakers are taking a hawkish stance on rates. Elsewhere, gold futures have climbed about 30% this year, thanks in no small part to positions taken by Soros Fund Management. That's right, George Soros picked up 240,000 shares of the gold spider, adding fuel to the upward move. The CRB Commodities Index culminating with a huge gain this week, thanks in no small part to black gold. Moody's Investors Service ratcheted up their base metals rating, citing improved economic prospects in China. The index tracks aluminum, copper, nickel, and zinc, which are expected to outperform for the time being. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, despite dollar weakness and dovish Fed meeting minutes, investors simply do not believe a word, I think, that emanates from our policymakers. The Fed funds futures are telling a very different story, leaning towards higher rates as soon as December, but not likely, more likely in the new year after the November elections would be my guess, which could be the perfect technical setup for a rally above $1,400 gold in coming months. In addition, the favorable Indian holiday seasons, as well as Christmas, Hanukkah, and related holidays, buying pressure could provide fundamental support pushing the markets to record highs, 14, even 1500 on the yellow metal, perhaps as soon as this year or early next year. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly sunny weather was seen over the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones Industrials finished off fractionally at 18,552 for the week. The S&P 500 finished near unchanged at 2183, while the NASDAQ Composite added 5 points, finishing near break even at 5238, climbing for the 8th consecutive week, 2 months of gains without a break, to the highest weekly close in the bull market so far. Moving on, investors chose the sidelines this week on indecision stemming from conflicting reports from the Fed. In related news, investors chose the sidelines this week on indecision stemming from U.S. domestic reports. While the Fed seems to be more hawkish, on Tuesday reports indicated U.S. factory production increased in July, while home construction accelerated unexpectedly to the best pace in about 5 months. Now, the news supports my thesis that new home starts remain strong, and then so will the domestic economy, which comprises a huge component of our internal strength. Plus, our higher rate differential continues to send funds from around the globe into the U.S. safe haven. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, the fear to greed index remains at highly frothy levels. Still, I think there's room on the upside and momentum is strong, as well as the technicals. From a valuation perspective, stocks might be pricey, but you know, a body in motion tends to remain in motion. And with those technicals behind us, it is conceivable that we might have a breakout in the coming weeks. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Co-founder of Chartered Market Technician Designation, the CMT. Director of Technical Research, Smith Barney Kidder, Peabody Prudential Securities, published author, popular lecturer. Welcome back, Ralph Acampora.
Thank you.
Would you like to add to some of your more current activities? I know there's got to be a lot of eager technicians in the audience.
Well, I always love to see young people and to talk to them about a subject they probably don't get at university. So my hobby, my venture, my avocation now is to go to universities. I was just at Texas A&M a couple of months ago. I'm going to the University of Chicago in November, and I'm collecting baseball caps from all the universities. That's my hobby.
You know, you're right. It's been anathema, hasn't it, for so many decades? But evidence is overwhelming. I mean, starting at the exact same time of Fama, 1970, where he was making the case, you know, for the efficient market hypothesis, there were detractors of the EMF and the MPT ideologies, long memory, whatever term you want to call it. Let's call it a trend, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I did a research for my slide deck that I use for my presentations, and I went back to the Bible and technical in finances called Security Analysis by Graham and Dodd. And I find in there quotes where he says the most important thing for an analyst, any analyst, is price. Hello. Yeah. That's what we do. We start with price. And then he talks about time. He talks about time is important. Then behavioral finance, which he didn't use that phrase, but he talked about sentiment. Yes, that's the backbone of what we do, and that's the core of the CMT exam.
Interesting, because, you know, W.D. Gann was, I think, one of the big forerunners of the time component of those three.
Yes.
In the inverted head and shoulder and the head and shoulder pattern, how absolutely critical it is to look for the right shoulder, if you will, on either one of the patterns there.
Exactly right. I love to use the phrase fusion analysis. I didn't coin that phrase. A fellow by the name of John Palicka in New York City did. God bless him, because that's what we all should be doing. Fusing all the inputs, start with economics and fundamental quantitative analysis, and then for sure the last thing you have to look at is the technical. And I don't even call it technical analysis anymore. I call it data visualization. Because what we have in front of us are all these wonderful machines, these computers, and the way they present the data today. Heck, you got to look for those trends you were just talking about.
It reminds me of that Garry Kasparov and the showdown between the Russian grandmaster champion and then, of course,
oh, yes,
the IBM machine, Deep Blue, the computer. Bring this all together. Your idea of fusion, I think, is so important because it's sort of like having that edge, meaning the human mind and the computer mind fusing, working together. It gives you an incredible competitive advantage.
You want to hear a great statistic? the chartered market technicians exam, which is coming up. We have a record number of people taking the exam now. That's fantastic. That follows on the comment you made before about now it's becoming more and more popular. I'm very, very proud of that. That's a huge accomplishment and something that more and more people are becoming aware of, especially in the regulators. I want it to be, and it is becoming our equivalent of the CFA, which rightly so it belongs, and the students should work hard to attain that accreditation. That's very, very important.
I think the hallmark of successful investors going back not just 100 years, but all the way back to the founder of Candlestick, the rice trading in Japan about 300-400 years ago. And he looked for those trends and had, according to legend, folks that would carry the prices about every few miles or so all the way to Osaka in his home there from the major exchange. Gave us so much of the technical analysis we use today. It worked and it works now. What a year of trends. Dow Jones, S&P 500, NASDAQ regularly closing, at least in recent weeks, near record highs, depending on what metric you consider. Do you see this trend persisting?
Absolutely. In fact, I was quoted last week as saying, I'm very excited because no one else is. I'm telling you, this is a market, and I've been doing this 50 years. And I tell you, this is one of the rarest moments when I've seen a market so hated by so many people. We're making all-time new highs as we have this conversation right now. Across the board, and I don't think I can ever remember in 50 years when the market this time round was led by market breadth before the leading averages made new all-time highs. Majority of individual stocks forging ahead. That's like the army leading the generals instead of the general leading the army. That's phenomenal as far as I'm concerned. I think we're on the verge of a melt-up. And it's going to be led by technology.
Because the sentiment is screaming the opposite. My favorite fear-greed index, the greed is off the charts. But we just see pattern after pattern of breakout here. As you say, the breadth is remarkable because there's nothing like nervousness among the herd.
You know, I think I heard someone on the TV this morning talking about the public not in the market and all that stuff. You know what? Trust me. There's nothing like rising stock prices to bring the public back into the market. And if they're not in right now, I think that's the biggest plus you can talk about it, because they will come in at some point. And I venture to say they're coming in at much higher prices.
I know one individual who has been calling the top on this market for a year. And every time it goes down, it bounces right back up.
You know, you can't be right all the time. So you can't fight. You can't fight the dynamics that are going on right now. If you continue to do that, then I don't know. I can't understand it. You know what's really impressive, and we didn't talk about it, is the fact that, you know, people keep saying, what's the stimulus on the way up? My question is, what's the stimulus on the way down? If Brexit didn't break this market down big time, I don't know what will. That was the final test, that two-day sell-off on Brexit.
From your perspective, it's really a contrarian plus, because the decline was so muted, so mediocre, it should have just led to a meltdown.
I don't know. And when it was happening, it didn't feel mediocre to me. It was scary. And when it turned, I was, honest to God, I wrote a report about the second quarter. I do these reports on every quarter for my little company. And I started out by saying, wow, what a quarter. Who would have ever expected that? I don't think anyone, honestly, if they were honest with themselves, would have expected that kind of a turnaround. And you know, while we're talking, the FTSE is not very far from making another all-time new high, the FTSE itself.
You know, it reminds me of Livermore's comments. Maybe I've quoted it too much here on the show, but he says, watch those reactions. You know, and if the reaction isn't too bad, likely you're going to see higher highs.
That's exactly what we're going through.
Very good. Well, give us an idea of your thoughts, please, on the precious metals.
I think, and I would not have said this a year ago, but I've been saying this for the last couple of months, I think gold and silver put in a bottom. In fact, the most recent activity coming off the lows have taken out a lot of those downtrends. So I think any kind of consolidation here is part of that base building process. In fact, on my Twitter account, I think last time I gave a target of somewhere around 1425, 1435, something near term for gold. So I think gold and silver have turned the corner, as I said. And, you know, it doesn't mean, because if you get a little strength in gold, that equities go down, because they can both go up simultaneously.
You know, that leads to my next question for you. Several of our top favorites on here on the show have expressed their concerns, their reticence regarding unusual situation with bonds moving higher, stocks, equities, commodities, the CRB index turning the corner, even crude oil caught a bottom 2 weeks ago with a long hammer-like pattern, finding support, by the way, I think it was the 200-period moving average.
We should always question things. And when I look back, just imagine you living in Europe and getting no returns. Where are you going to go with your money? Seriously, where can you go? Yeah. Got to come here. They're coming here. That's where this money is. That's where the money is coming from.
And remember Shinzo Abe's regime as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something like $4 trillion in pension funds in Tokyo. They get anxious. They want to know that their retirement's going to be a little better. Negative interest rates, not so enticing. We've got $13 trillion right now in sovereign debt.
I like the leadership. And I think that's what you got to be looking at. Technology is a big part of that, of course. And you got basic industries, and you got industrials coming on. And that's that new leadership is what's carrying this. And I think the ultimate head fake is going to be when financials pick up. And I'm just waiting for that for those to break out. And if I was a long-term investor, I'd be buying the financials.
Isn't that a little unusual? Because memory serves, financials have at least a tendency to lead the market either higher or lower.
Yes, that's also an interesting phenomenon with this market. They haven't. But technology and breadth, and when I say breadth, then you got to start looking at small and mid-cap stocks, the Russell and the S&P mid-cap index. I mean, they look fantastic.
Do you attribute the fact that financials have maybe lagged a bit, although I think you'd agree in the years leading up, they were on red hot, on fire for many years. But
yes.
Do you attribute the recent sluggishness to the lackluster rates? Because Econ 101, most financial institutions have a tendency to benefit from the spread between their loans and, of course, the interest they can earn.
Absolutely. But at some point, that will change also. Rates won't stay down this low. At some point, the Fed's going to have to start raising rates. And, you know, everybody get nervous about it. You know, what's a quarter of a percent? It doesn't make that much difference. It really doesn't.
You know, the Fed funds futures now look like no rate hikes until probably 2017. Maybe we'll be at 75 to 100 basis points. Anything that maybe you're nervous about or perhaps individual securities that you're watching closely?
No, I just want to say to people, stay bullish. Thank you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Harry S. Dent Jr., editor of the free newsletter Survive and Prosper, head of HS Dent Forecasting, also author of several bestsellers. How's the weather today in Puerto Rico?
It's good as usual, a little cloudy, but it's sunny, and, you know, all I see is water here.
Friend of the show, Peter Schiff, also recently purchased a condo/townhouse in Puerto Rico.
If we're building a house on an island, Culebra, but we're leasing a condo in Condado, which is kind of like the hippest, you'd never know there was a recession sitting where I'm sitting.
Because we keep hearing all these horror stories about bailouts and things, but apparently not a big issue. Well, let's move to the domestic economy. You know, the labor market conditions index is a favorite of ours here, a leading economic indicator. When it drops below zero, and labor conditions tend to slacken a bit for a few months, as we've seen now since January of last year, we tend to have a recession fall. Not always, but sometimes. Have you any concerns about labor numbers?
I'm not as concerned there for the reason that it tends to be a lagging indicator, whereas stocks tend to be more leading, and also, you know, in at least GDP and retail sales and all are more coincident. So, I mean, I see signs. I mean, everything keeps slowing, you know, despite so much stimulus around the world and free money. I mean, basically, bonds everywhere are either yielding negative or zero when you adjust for inflation, and that's free money. With all this free money and quantitative easing, we're still growing. Like, now it looks like more like 1%. So we're certainly headed there. I think I am highly convinced that 2017 is going to be a bad year for the markets and the economy. It's just a question of how soon the markets kind of recognize this, because they certainly don't right now. The markets still feel like, well, you know, central banks got our back and money's free and life's okay and the economy's not great, but it's not terrible. So stocks just go up because there's nowhere else for people to put their money.
There's another metric we like to follow, and that's temporary jobs. You know, the theme there, the trend, another forward indicator. And we're starting to see this sag. It's a bit of a newer metric. We don't have a lot of data, only going back about 25 years. But it has started to do this, to decline sharply before every major recession of the last 2.5 decades.
Yeah, I mean, that makes more sense. Used cars are also a good indicator in the past, a lot of people told me. But since, you know, temporary workers, that's more flexibility. So that's the first thing people are going to cut. So, I mean, that would make total sense that would be a sign. And again, most things we see are saying we're going to be in a recession next year if we're not already kind of almost there now.
U.S. housing starts remain extremely strong for several years. Every time we keep hearing about the horror stories that are supposed to unfold, you know, the housing crash part two, U.S. housing starts just keep bumping higher and rebounding.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the millennials have put off buying for a long time, and now I think they're just finally saying, well, shoot, you know, we can't wait any longer. And they're still nowhere near what they were at the highs. So I mean, it's relative that they're bouncing. But I also see housing as more of a lagging indicator. Stocks were almost always ahead of the housing market. 2006 was an exception because of the subprime crisis and because the demographic trends turned down on housing before they did in the general economy, and that's expected. But in a normal business cycle like this, I don't expect housing to start to go down and have problems until after the economy's well into a recession. So I do think we are in bubble number two, and it's much more extreme in areas like South Beach and then San Francisco and Vancouver and Toronto and most of the coastal cities and around the world. And China's just bubble I've ever seen in real estate. So I think real estate is going to be a problem, but it's not going to be the first thing we see. I'd be more looking for stocks to start to weaken first, and then I'd start worrying about real estate.
I'd like to talk about the balance sheet at the Fed. Policymakers have been holding the balance sheet at around $4.5 trillion. The economy, as you say, treading water. Again, holding steady for 2 years. What happens if they surprise everyone and don't keep adding to the balance sheet?
I just think, you know, I think the economy is going to continue to weaken. And so the Fed may be talking about raising rates or taking down the balance sheet somewhere down the road. I don't think they're going to end up doing it, because I think the economy is going to continue to weaken, and they're going to be turning around saying, oh, my gosh, we got to do QE4. I think that's not far away, or the helicopter money trick, you know, just start sending people's checks in the mail or something, or printing money and building you know, infrastructure or something. It's pathetic to me and really irresponsible that, you know, 8 years into this, that they still feel like, I mean, the economy's still on life support. And hey, we're the only ones that are just keeping our balance sheet at the same. I mean, Japan's furiously increasing it, and so is Europe, and the only tendency is to increase that, especially after Brexit. So, I mean, we're still the best house in a bad neighborhood with our demographics not as poor as Japan or China now or Europe, and our monetary policies are not nearly as aggressive, especially as Japan. But it shows how weak the underlying economies are, that this much stimulus this long, and Japan's still, you know, averaging around zero, and Europe's averaging maybe 1%, and we were averaging 2%, and now we're looking like 1%. It shows that you know, fundamentally, we're in a weak stage in the economy, and that is largely due to demographics and unbelievably high debt levels.
Okay, but give us an idea of why, if it's demographic-based, or at least partially so, why a nation like China, which is relatively young compared to the West, would suffer on a forward basis?
Well, there's a big thing happening there that nobody's seen. The biggest way that emerging countries grow, demographics is a number two indicator for me when I'm looking at a China or an India or Malaysia or somebody like that. I'm looking at urbanization and how rapidly GDP per capita grows with every, you know, 1% or 10% of increased urbanization. That is the biggest lever. Urbanization tends to triple the income of a worker that's moving from a rice paddy to just becoming a taxi driver in Mumbai or something like that. So what's happened in China, they've been pushing urbanization much stronger than any other country, building stuff for nobody to support jobs for all these unskilled people coming in. And for the first time in 2015, more people went back to rural areas than went to urban. The urbanization trend has come to a halt. In fact, it's gone negative, but they're still building condos and infrastructures and office buildings and malls and railways for nobody. And so their excuse in the past is, yeah, we know we got a 27% empty condos and we're building stuff to, you know, for nobody, but one day we're going to need them. Well, they're not going to need them if people have stopped moving to the cities. And then there's good reasons for that, Chris. The cost of living there is unbelievable. The Shanghai prices are up 8 times over 2000. The traffic is horrible. The smog and pollution is horrible. And these people are not registered citizens, so they don't get whatever education and health care and minor welfare benefits. And a lot of them have to leave their kids back in the rural areas with their grandparents so they can actually go to school. So it's a mess. And these people have finally said, you know what, this is too hard. We're not getting paid enough with such high cost of living. We're just going to go back to the rice paddy. And a lot of them are starting little businesses, you know, starting a restaurant or something like that. But this urban thing is done, and nobody stood up and said, hey, how is China going to keep building stuff for nobody when there really is nobody, not even in the future? The urbanization, that's a big deal.
Let's shift the focus halfway around the world to the EU. Thoughts on the Brexit? Should we assume that further dominoes will drop, or will they just reorganize?
No, there's going to be further dominoes. This is not just Europe. This is Trump America. This is everything. When you go into a more difficult economy like we did in the early 30s, everybody gets protectionist. Free trade goes out the window. Tariffs go up or whatever, or currency wars like we're seeing with Japan pushing down their trying to artificially push down their currency. I mean, everybody starts cheating, and everybody gets protectionist. And unions tend to break up, if anything. So, I mean, I would not be surprised, Chris, a movement for Trump America. He's going to take his 30, 40% loyal people and kind of create some separate state or something. I don't know. I mean, but there's no question to me. Brexit is the first of many. Italy is the next Greece. There's no question about that in my mind, and Portugal's not far behind them. They're going to have debt defaults, and there's no way to bail out, especially Italy. So that's going to come. Does Italy have to leave the euro and the union so they can devalue their currency to get out of their mess? Because otherwise, what are they going to do if they're not going to get bailouts like Greece did, and Greece has gotten, I think, three major bailouts and are still bankrupt. Italy's got 18% non-performing loans. So I see, and the markets rewarded the UK for leaving. You know, everybody thought the market's going to crash. They crashed for a couple of days. They turned around and went up. The markets basically said, hey, you did the right thing, and German stocks and French stocks and Eurozone stocks have been doing poorly, and the UK's been doing better.
Wouldn't you say that was first mover advantage for the UK?
Yeah, they're the first mover. There's going to be more. More countries are going to consider this. The EU and the Euro is not that popular in France or Italy either. And so, you know, all Italy's got to do is get in trouble, and then next thing you know, Italy thinks, well, maybe we got to leave, but then maybe France or Germany says, well, we can't stay in this union, and we got to keep bailing out all these countries. So I don't know. It doesn't have to be restructured. It's not going to be workable, and countries are going to get more protectionist. And the big trigger for Brexit, because all the polls said elsewhere until very close in, it was this whole migration thing. Nobody wants to lose control of their borders.
We spoke with Jim Rogers in a Singapore office. He said, regardless of your standpoint or your viewpoint on this, it's always the refugees, it's always the outsiders, it's always the immigrants, it's always those born outside the borders who catch the blame. Because when economic conditions deteriorate...
Yeah, I mean, I'm pro-immigration. I mean, immigrants may have lower incomes and lower education in the United States, unlike places like Australia. They work harder. They raise their incomes. Their kids learn English. It's a good thing. Immigration is the difference between us and Europe. We've got stronger immigration, and Australia and countries like that have much, and Singapore have much stronger demographics ahead than the United States because they have stronger immigration than we do. Immigration is a good thing. The problem with this is these are not people who are moving by choice to better their life. They're just escaping a dangerous and difficult situation. They don't, you know, that's not going to happen easily. They're not the same religion or cultural background. These are going to be much harder to incorporate into Europe, and Europe's not good at incorporating immigrants like we are and like Australia is and Singapore. Singapore's stellar at this. I mean, they forced everybody, all different ethnic groups, to live in the same neighborhoods so they wouldn't have all this ethnic division. And they don't, despite all the different people they have there. So immigration's a good thing, but I think this one is more of a sinking ship. It's too big a cost. These people are going to take too long to bring into the economy and be productive, and a lot of them may end up going back when things settle down 3, 4, 5 years from now. Anyway, go back to where they can, you know, be in their culture and their religion. So I just think this is a mess.
Well, money's flowing in from the EU and Japan seeking return where there is none. And inevitably, you know, the spigots there run dry and search elsewhere, and that might be the impetus. Might they not just, the Fed officials, ratchet up that balance sheet again, continue with QE operations to keep the whole edifice standing?
Well, I think they will as soon as the economy weakens, and I am super convinced it's going to weaken in the next year. Of course they'll go for QE4. The question is, will they have lost the confidence of the public? Because when you go and print trillions and trillions of dollars, then you fall back into a deeper recession. It kind of tells people, oh, that doesn't really work. And people, you know, they're tolerating all this stimulus because it's working enough to keep us from collapsing. But at the back of their mind, people are not stupid. They know you don't get something for nothing, and this is total something for nothing. Now, two things to note here. One is I think it's more than stocks. This is we look at how the futures traders or sentiment. They got the smart money, the commercials who are the real hedgers, and then you got the hedge funds and traders who just follow the trends, and they've got very good definitions of this. And right now, I've never seen this before, the smart money is short everything. They are record short treasury bonds. They're short stocks, especially the NASDAQ. They're short commodities. They're short gold and silver. I mean, and even somewhat short the dollar and the yen. Now, those things don't usually go up and down together. They've gone up together, say, in the last year. And now this sentiment says, we could see almost everything go down, and the trigger could be that this treasury bond trade reverses, not because we get some surprise in inflation or something, although that might happen. It's just simply because traders at high leverage have piled into this trade of buying futures and, you know, 20 to 30 times leverage, buying bonds ahead of governments who they know are going to keep buying their own bonds. So they're just buying ahead of them and making easy profits at high leverage. So it's almost like a low-risk, free-gift trade from the central banks. But no trade goes up forever. And when everybody's piled in and there's nobody left to buy it, and then bonds are now negative instead of just zero increasingly, that trade could reverse. I've been warning for a long time that in the early stages of the next crisis, before bonds go lower in yields than ever, even in the Great Depression, they're probably going to spike up. We could see a 3% 10-year treasury, I think, in the next 6 and 12 months, and that is definitely not good for stock valuations and definitely not good for real estate.
Okay. Can you help investors to understand why it might be wise to add a modicum or two to their portfolios to balance the betas?
Well, I think the biggest advantage is for diversification. That, you know, people, yeah, you have 5 to 10% gold and silver. I've been bearish on it because I see deflation ahead instead of inflation. And the gold markets finally, in early 2013, Japan tripled their stimulus. We're just up in QE and inflation started falling instead of going up. People finally got that we're not going to get this hyperinflation, and that's why gold took a hit. But late last year, we were telling people, look, gold's taken a big fall from 1,800 to 1,050 in a short period of time. It's due for what I call a bear market bounce, and my target was 1,400. Well, we just got to 1,373 or something, or 77, and we could still hit 1,400 or a little higher. So I've been bullish on gold near term, but I still think that gold follows the commodity cycle, just like it did in the 70s and 80s. It went up with commodities. It peaked in 1980 when commodity prices peaked, and then it crashed into the 80s along with commodities. Gold is a lot of things, but it is also a commodity, and it is a super incredibly good inflation hedge and was the best investment in the 1970s. But I don't see it being a hedge against deflation, and I don't see it as much a crisis metal as some of the gold bugs do, because I look and say, what was the biggest crisis we had in the last several years? And it was the meltdown of Lehman Brothers in the financial system in late 2008, and gold went down.
But we are seeing some interesting things in the topicality. For instance, Bitcoin plunges on news that there are security risks that were unforeseen. And see, this is just one of those black swan-like events that very few people saw coming, other than insiders, that suddenly increases the appeal of safe haven assets. Another thing that comes to mind, we tend to see negative correlation reestablish itself when stocks and bonds and real estate start to slide. And we haven't really seen that too intensely yet. But were that to happen, don't you think that we could get a final blow-off run in the metals as money turns away from the paper asset classes?
Well, look, last time in 2008, gold went up for several months after stocks, but then it collapsed with them in the second half of 2008. So, yeah, that's a possibility. But I think gold's already making that kind of preemptive run. And again, right now, when I look at the trader sentiment, the most extreme is in gold and silver. Like the smart money is like 300,000 contracts net short. The hedge funds are 300,000 net long. That is a huge divergence. It's similar in treasury bonds, commodities, stocks, and other things. But the most extreme is gold and then treasury bonds. So that's saying treasury bonds are going to go down, which means yields up at some point, and gold's going to go down at some point. Now, that could still be months away. So that's kind of hard to call. But I tell you, I don't like seeing that sort of setup. And then again, I've never seen these indicators. The smart money is short everything except the euro and the British pound right now. Short everything.
So you're looking at the commitment of traders reports and noticing the institutional versus hedge fund.
The commercials, they call them. These are people who are really hedging and have to know what they're doing, and they're doing it for real reasons for their business. And then you got the hedge funds that just jump in. The longer something goes up, the more they jump on and pile in. So when you're at a major turning point, the large speculators or the hedge funds are going to be super long, and the commercials are going to be super short, and that's what everything, especially gold and treasury bonds right now, and I tell you, nobody expects treasury bond yields to go up. Well, I would be worried about that. I'd be selling some of my treasury bonds right now. I'd probably rather have gold than treasury bonds right now. HarryDent.com, real simple, go there. We're giving away our book, the updated version of The Demographic Cliff. All you pay is $4.95 shipping, which is the actual shipping cost, so we're not even making any money on that. And we're also, the newsletter now is called Economy and Markets, and it's a free daily newsletter, and you can get that at HarryDent.com as well. So that's a way to get to know us. We have paid newsletters that people can trade up to, but, you know, the best thing is just listen to us, fall in love with us or not.
Best of luck with that incredibly exciting adventure.
Yeah, it was a difficult move, but I tell you, we love it here so far. Bye-bye, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes 3 deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. When you turn on the TV or radio nowadays, do you feel like your senses and sensibilities are being bombarded with antimatter? It's as if we're in an ocean of information, yet at some level dying from a lack of knowledge and wisdom. It's like feeding oneself with empty calories that pack on the weight, yet ultimately starve the body from lack of nutrition. When news or knowledge reaches this level of rhetorical diatribe, it becomes easier and easier to just throw in the towel and get washed downstream with others who have given up and given in to this antimatter of thought we call news. Everyone buckles at different times and for different reasons. Some do it to fit in. Others grow tired of the responsibility for always having to decipher and outthink the news and education that is the backdrop of society. When you watch news organizations rooting for their favorite political candidate, or other points of view, on a whole host of agenda-driven topics, and you find yourself getting caught up in the moment, ask yourself, am I cheering this person or that idea on because I want it to be true or because it is true? Another way you can ask this question of yourself is by saying, is this true or do I want it to be true? In other words, are you lying to yourself? Because that is still the ultimate in intellectual honesty. If you know you are fooling yourself and you still do it, you need to be aware of it. Whether it's watching the machinations of a political campaign unfold, whether it's trying to make sense of the growing number of alternative media voices and distinguish the true thought leaders, or whether it's looking realistically at your personal and professional situation and continuing down the same garden path, or finally making the commitment to take action on some aspect of change you have been wanting to advance but have been just afraid to try. The time for eyes and ears wide open is now. Because the biggest deceit is not what our media or would-be political candidates tell us or don't tell us. The biggest deceit is self-deception. Everyone does it to some extent. The question is, what end of the scale are you practicing it on? Are you compromising with yourself by eating out at a restaurant you don't really care for? Or seeing a movie that doesn't particularly interest you? Or are you fooling yourself on the bigger questions of life? Like suspending your intellectual curiosity because you feel it's just too much work to ask, and then answer yourself on the truly important questions that impact your quality of life and future. Truth is supposed to rule. That is the mark of leadership. Media often creates the illusion of consensus and peer pressure to shoehorn people into particular thought paradigms. Sometimes those are correct. Sometimes they are not. As media from all sources revs up its intellectual antimatter, your challenge, and it is a constant challenge, will be to make the necessary course corrections in your thinking by asking yourself, is it true, or do I want it to be true? Only then can you know for sure if that particular subject or person is one you can follow along with, at least temporarily, with some degree of intellectual honesty. Chris, I'd like to direct our listeners to visit my website at conquerchange.com and join my new email list. I've been gearing up for some time to release new content and special features, which are just around the corner, so please direct your browser to conquerchange.com and sign up today. Updates will follow soon. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with conquerchange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garnero, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Thank you.
Gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
And a little encouragement for our burgeoning vegetarians and vegans here. You can save up to a million lives simply by just eating a vegetarian diet. You can start slowly. I mean, nowadays, veggie burgers and veggie alternatives are so tasty, you just can't tell the difference half the time. So it's really not necessary for us to put these animals through what they go through. We can have very healthy lives, and in fact, studies are showing currently that the typical male can add 10 years to his life, and the typical lady, 7 years to her life, by simply switching to a vegetarian diet. It really benefits everyone all around, and you can save up to 10 lives a day by just switching over. Do the math on that. That's $4,000 or $5,000 a year. 10 years, you're in the neighborhood of $40,000 to $50,000. Before you know it, you've saved 250,000 lives over your lifetime. If you convince just 4 or 5 more other people, you saved 1 million lives. You contributed to it.